Well, I have a bunch of things on my mind. Pray for me, would you? And along with me. Father, I thank you for this day of life, and I thank you for everyone that's here. I ask you to bless everyone that's here. And Lord, you have said that you would keep in perfect peace the one whose mind has stayed on you. I ask you to help us all to keep our minds stayed upon you. And bless everyone here, Father, and help me to share such things as you would be happy with, and in a way that's fitting, in Yeshua's name. Amen. Okay, so first of all, an update on the furnace in the back. It is shot. And what happened was they did a whole bunch of work. They got the wet fuel cleaned out of it, and they got it running. It was running well. And then something happened where, it's yet to be determined, but the heat exchanger must have somehow broken or come apart. So the smoke that's supposed to go out the chimney was blowing out the heating vents. That's why the fire alarm went off. And that is why, perhaps at this point, all of the doors in the back are still open. Venting that stuff out. So I don't think that we're going to be spending any time back there. I guess the only thing we would have to do is decide whether to just leave early or to put tables in here and have the oneg. But I think it's going to be really cold back there. But there will be a new furnace. Does anybody happen to know who voted for and who voted against the new Taking Good Care of Women Act that's been put in place in New York? We want women to be taken care of. We want them to be healthy, and so that's why this thing has come to be, right? Because women matter, and people that are against abortion don't care about women, right? Boo? I'm being booed. It really is amazing the things that people can actually think, because in case you don't realize, there are a lot of people that talk like that. They really think they are caring about people. You know, some of them may be just hateful, nasty people, but a lot of them actually think that they are fighting for freedom and the good of humankind. How exactly a person gets to the point where they can either vote for something while at the same time denying that it makes possible what it makes possible, you know, it can be a mystery. But the ability of human beings to not think about certain parts of things that they just don't want to think about is immense. Have you ever noticed that? Have you ever been in denial about anything? What? Well, that's how it happens. I've talked to a lot of people that are in favor of abortion that are really uncomfortable talking about the actual details and mechanics of it. They don't want to think about it. And, you know, for one of the first times in my life, I found myself sort of thinking I might prefer to not think about this thing right now. Because when I do think about it, it is so absolutely disgusting and gross and grieving and abominable that it really isn't, it's not much fun to think about. During the course of my life, I've felt in some ways that I should find out some things about the worst things that humanity does. And in my quest to make sure that I actually came to understand to some degree just how evil mankind can be, I have read about things that to this day, some of which I wish I had never found out. There are things I will never tell another human being because they're just so awful that to even talk about them seems evil. But it is evil to not know about the nature of evil in this world. It's evil to allow yourself to be so insulated and ignorant that you don't know the things that happen in this world. Because not knowing allows a person to think that a lot of things just aren't going on. But I'll tell you, almost anything you could come up with in your imagination that would be horrible, and I'm not suggesting that you spend time doing that, it's probably being done and worse than you can come up with. There's just no end to it. And to me, some of it can only be described by there has to be demonic and dark spiritual powers in the world because I just don't think humanity as created would be so devastatingly and disgustingly creative about new forms of evil as they get under what I believe is demonic inspiration and control. So anyway, I don't know what the vote was. Does anyone know if any libertarians voted for the bill? Are there any libertarians in the Senate or the House in New York? I don't even know what the makeup is now. Did any Democrats vote against the bill? Does anyone know? Does anyone think any of them voted against it?
I don't think so. I think some abstained.
Yeah, I want to find out who voted for what. Does anyone know if any Republicans voted for it?
None.
What?
For it.
No Republicans voted for it. I don't know. I'll leave it to you to determine whether that indicates any difference at all politically between the parties. To me, if all of the Democrats voted for it and no Republicans did, it says something. What it doesn't say is that the Republicans are all great people that are only doing good. It doesn't necessarily either, on the other hand, say that all of the Democrats are only in favor of doing bad things, right? It doesn't mean that. And I dare say there are people in the Senate and in the House, in the Republican Party, I don't even know what the makeup of it is now, that are responsible for abortions having happened. There is no righteous political party. Certainly not in this country. And I don't think there is one anywhere else. We may think this group or that group is more or less righteous. But, you know, it's not just a matter of simple black and white, simple right and wrong. And frankly, well, I put one little post on Facebook that this past Tuesday, the World Trade Center was lit up in celebration of the failure of the church in America. It's time to stop blaming political parties for the state we're in. The scriptures don't tell us to hold unbelievers responsible for evil. They do tell us that the righteous have an effect in a society and that being salt and light is, well, first of all, it is being salt and light, and that salt and light have an effect on things. So, you know, I really don't like Cuomo. I really don't. But I don't hate the guy. I could hate the guy. That would be wrong. We should pray that God has mercy on him. He is the one. I can still hear the voice in response to certain political things that oppose his views. New York's not going backwards. We're gonna go forward. And that's just exactly what he's done. The question is, towards what? I'm not going to say he hasn't gone forward. But you know, when God told Moses, "What are you yakking about? Move forward." He wasn't standing at the edge of a cliff at the bottom of which was the abyss. But that is what Cuomo has been doing. He wants to charge forward off the edge of a cliff into the abyss. But he doesn't know that's what he's doing. So pray for him. The scriptures say to pray for such people. Why? Because they're in power. That's the only requirement for us to pray for any government leader is that they're in the position they're in. The scriptures don't say pray for the ones you like. They don't say pray for the ones that are in the party you think is a great party or you're a member of. They don't say that. They tell us to pray for them. Pray for the people in charge. So we ought to pray for him. And we should pray for him, and we should pray for President Trump, no matter what we think of either one of them. And I'm not exactly a fan of either one of them. I imagine if I went looking, I could probably find some good things about Cuomo. Probably could. Maybe I should. Maybe I should look for some. Maybe I shouldn't just think, well, he's who I think he is. Maybe he's not who I think he is. Maybe he's a little different than I think. Maybe Trump is different than I think. And I don't know if any of you actually know what I think of Trump. The welfare of women is not what this is about. I'd rather not think about it. But I don't have that choice available to me. I cannot, before God, decide that I have the ability to blot things out of my mind and not think about them just because they're ugly and inconvenient and evil. I don't have that choice. I think that we have a responsibility for what's happening in our state and in our country, and that simply blaming politicians on one side or the other is a big mistake. It's not the point. Do I wish the ones that were not in favor of this had enough power to have prevented it? Yes, I do. But that has nothing to do with thinking they're righteous or not. I just wish the people that would have voted the other way outnumbered the ones that would vote the way it went. But here we are. And things are not getting better. And I have been telling some people that think America is absolutely evil and like the worst place on earth. It always amazes me there are Americans that think that. That we are not yet as bad as the Roman Empire. Not by a long shot, but you know, we're getting there. We are getting there. So, I've known a number of women that have had abortions. None of the ones that I know have ever said anything good about it. Not politically, not emotionally, not personally, not generally, not in any way at all, not the ones that I know. And I have a friend whose entire family of siblings was aborted by her mother's choice. And it's surprising sometimes to find out who agrees with you on certain things, because when I was in graduate school, I would have just assumed and probably had that she was in favor of abortion like everybody else in the program seemed to be. But she wasn't. She was a Jewish survivor of her mother's own womb, and none of her siblings fell into the same category as she did. Six or seven siblings she would have had, but she was an only child. Never heard her say one good thing about abortion either. So, strangely, where I'm going to go from here, I find to be kind of related. And by the way, in case you don't know, there are people like school nurses that go to evangelical Christian churches that are in favor of abortion. I've met them. There are more and more people in evangelical churches that believe that we arose from the muck by a slow process of little teeny changes happening, or big ones all at once, however it may happen to be peddled at the moment. But they do think, at least a lot of them, that God controlled the process of slow change and adaptation and all of that, and that finally you've got us. And I know some messianic rabbis who think that that's how we came about and don't believe Neanderthals were human beings. Humanoid, but without souls. I don't find evidence of that in the scriptures, but, well, hey, the scriptures don't tell us every detail, right? I do think that all of that thinking has something to do with how we've gotten to where we are with abortion now. Even among people that name the name of God and there are more and more Christians now that are like, why can't I think of his name now? The guy that ran for president, he made a couple of politically disastrous comments, Dukakis. One of them, may have heard him more than the other, was, I'm a card-carrying member of the ACLU. That one hurt him. But he also said, I don't know when life begins. I don't know if I'll ever know. And in case you don't know, there are people that want to push the beginning of life past the day of birth. Or at least, well, acknowledging that it might be life at that point, you should still be able to snuff it out for certain reasons that would probably be for the protection of the mother, her mental health, her emotional health, whatever. Those people are still a minority among the ones that want full and total abortion rights, but I suspect that that's going to gradually change too. Anyway, this will be the messianic moment, or moments, or whatever. Have you ever heard of a guy named Joseph Rabinowitz? Who's heard of him? Well, I'm not going to try to tell you all about him. I couldn't even tell you all about him, but at some point I probably will be able to tell you all about him. But I'm going to read you just something about his story. Let's see. In 1887, he is reported to have related the following at a meeting in London. There are many Christian ministers and others who do not believe in the conversion of the Jew. By the way, I decided to define the conversion of a Jew. Because I don't like the word. It has an ugly history. And that history means the denial of Jewishness in favor of accepting a Jew named Yeshua. But I'm not so sure that the people that forced those conversions even believed in a Jew named Yeshua. They did believe in brute force, I guess. Anyway, the conversion then would be of a Jew, would be the reception of the new covenant that God promised to the Jewish people by a Jewish person. What do you think? Okay. Anyway, there are many Christian ministers and others who do not believe in the conversion of the Jew. They think him so dead that he cannot be made to live again. How do you think he got that impression? This is a terrible mistake, which may be illustrated by the story of a soldier who was written down as dead. During the Russo-Turkish War? After one battle, two companies of soldiers went to pick up the wounded and the dead. In one place, they picked up 150, and the sergeant wrote down 150 dead. The order was given that a grave should be dug, and the 150 soldiers buried in it. whilst they were putting in the dead bodies, it was found that one was alive. He called out, "Have pity on me, I am not dead, I am alive." What do you think happened? The sergeant replied, "I am very sorry. I should like to save you, but I have entered you on the dead list and you must be buried." Wow. Even so it is with many theologians in their treatment of the Jews. They say the Jew is dead. He will never come back to his God or his land, and therefore he must be buried. Now, this was before Israel became a state again in 1948. This was during the period of time where some strange Puritans were constantly praying for the Jewish people and their return to the land. They say the Jew is dead. He will never come back to his God or his land, and therefore he must be buried. In their sense of the term, the Jew is not dead. He is still alive. And when he is quickened spiritually by Messiah, well, it says grace here, he will impart the highest life to the dead world. Rabinowitz stubbornly fought for the idea that a Jew who comes to faith in Jesus as Messiah does not need to give up his Jewish identity. How this came about is a story in itself. And I would have to keep on reading to go any farther, and I'd have to probably read a long ways. So, during the course of time, things really switched around. In the first century, there were these guys, they were apostles. If there were pictures of them in the first couple hundred years, I'm pretty sure they didn't look like Norwegians or Swedes. But most of the pictures, a lot of the pictures I've seen that were supposed to depict them, looked like Norwegians and Swedes. Always seemed odd to me. I mean, even where I come from, I didn't think those guys would look like me or my neighbor in northern Minnesota. Didn't make sense to me. So, anyway, there was this thing going on among Jewish people. It's funny, isn't it, that when faith in Yeshua first came about, almost everybody that believed was a Jew. No, it's not. You can take exception to anything I say that you like, by the way. I want to make it very clear. Nobody here is expected to think what I think. I may act like I'm expecting you to think like I think. I may talk to you like I'm trying to make you think the same thing that I'm saying. I apologize. Let me know if I'm doing it. But I will talk like I mean what I'm saying. And when I'm wrong, I'll try to make sure that gets corrected. We're all wrong about many things. We all make many mistakes. And the road to glory is paved with grace and God's patience. And I'm very happy about that, because God's patience is salvation. And when you feel impatient with other people, just think about how God's patience is salvation to you. So, a whole bunch of those Jewish people had some ideas that probably, you know, in some way made sense, which is that the Gentiles basically had to become What is a Gentile anyway? What is a Gentile? You know, in Matthew 18, it says, if someone among believers sins and they won't listen, they won't repent, and they won't listen to you, and then they won't listen to witnesses, and they won't listen to the congregation, to then after that treat them like a Gentile or an IRS agent. So what is a Gentile? Yeah, one meaning would be heathen. Another meaning would be pagan. It's an interesting word. If you just try to look at the word itself and where it comes from, it's not immediately just distinct. It doesn't get translated exactly the same way in every place and every translation. But if we're supposed to treat backsliders who won't repent as Gentiles, then I don't want to be treated like a Gentile. What then should I want to be treated like? I'm going to leave that now. We're not going to talk about that now. But at any rate, there were a bunch of Jewish people that thought it was a surprise that, you know, people that weren't of Israel were starting to believe in the Jewish Messiah. It was kind of a surprise. And it was thought that they needed to live like Jews by some of them. And they had a council, and the apostles were part of it. And you know, I'm sure they argued back and forth, and there was probably some Republicans and some Democrats that also had their position to throw into the mix. And, you know, at any rate, in the end, the apostles, and they were all Jews, they decided that a person that was not born Jewish should not be made to act like a Jew in order to come to faith in the Jewish Messiah. That's what they decided. Now, in the Messianic movement, there are people that believe that even now, all of the non-Jews that come to faith in Yeshua should end up living like Jews. That's not the way I read Acts 15. What? Why? Oh. We could write a set of encyclopedias to answer that question because they don't all think it for the same reasons. So let's see. Okay, so how far have we gotten? What was the last thing that I just said?
That's not the way you read Acts 15.
Oh, yes. So they decided that basically what they decided was that, hey, salvation has come to the Gentiles too. And we don't want to make it hard for them to come to Yeshua. So we're going to not put a burden on them that neither we nor our fathers were able to bear. That's what they said. What sense does it make to take a bunch of Greeks from Corinth and put on them a load that we and our fathers couldn't bear, when what's happening is that God is pouring his grace and mercy out on humanity because of what he has done through our people, because of his patience, mercy, and kind intention, not because we're so great. Let's not put a stumbling block in their way because God has flung the doors of salvation wide open and broken down the dividing barrier. And is going to, by and by, create one single new humanity, just like he intended from the beginning.
Amen.
We don't have to stop being Jews, and they don't have to become just like us in order to have God's mercy poured on them. So basically what they said was, hey, we don't even think you need to keep the Shabbat. Just don't eat things that were strangled to death. Please don't eat blood. Don't fornicate. You know, they didn't even tell him not to commit murder because they knew that the whole world already understood that that was wrong, even though there are people that would justify it. They basically just told them, go by the things that God gave to Moses, Noach, in the covenant with Noach, and keep yourself unstained by sexual immorality. Don't eat blood. If you do this, you'll do well. They didn't make it hard for them. But then things turned around over time, and what became known as the church began to make it not just hard for Jewish people, but impossible. And I'm going to read you just a little bit about that. Direct evidence of Jews who practice Messianic Judaism after the First Council of Nicaea is scanty. Does anyone have a hard time believing that? Does anyone have any idea why maybe evidence of that is scanty?
You have to hide it or you die.
Persecution, you had to hide it. What did you say something? That's probably true, but you know, there may have been more of it than was evident. It's like, you know, there are people that have spent a lot of time in holes under the ground in China, printing little things with scripture on them. And then so that somebody could go out and spread them around. And I imagine there wasn't all that much evidence of those people that were hiding in those holes under the ground doing that stuff, because you know, it's really hard to see people that have to hide just to stay alive long enough to share the gospel.
Archaeologists have found symbols that Jewish
believers
used to follow.
So.
Can you reread the first line?
Direct evidence of Jews who practiced Messianic Judaism after the First Council of Nicaea is scanty. There isn't much of it. Is that what you wanted to hear?
Yeah, it's typical of underground movements that are driven underground.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why they call them underground, I guess. So this is because the view that Jews could not become Christians and remain Jews was backed by canon law and what else do you think? Constantine's sword. Well, that makes it hard. You know, they could have been a little nicer and said, to those of you from among the Jews that want to believe in, well, your own Messiah, if you just eat pork and don't circumcise your kids, you'll do well. And we'll let you in then. They were nowhere near that kind. So, the Second Council of Nicaea in 787 was the first ecumenical council to ban Messianic Jews from the church. Messianic Jews were required to renounce all ties to Judaism through professions of faith like the one from the Church of Constantinople. I renounce absolutely everything. What? Yes. Jewish. You know, like, I don't know, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, maybe?
Even Torah, Yeshua.
Torah.
Even Islam doesn't.
Passover. By the way, just I want to make something clear. I love the church. I love it. I love the church. And I don't think I or we are any better than anybody in some church down the road from here. There are some churches down the road from here that do think they're better than the other churches down the road, though. I know that. If you want to know who they are, you can go looking. I'm not going to talk much about that. But I know such churches exist. I have been in churches like that. I have visited places like that. I've been told that. We cannot have contempt. Well, we really shouldn't have contempt for anybody. But the body of Messiah in the world was not created to have contempt toward other parts of it. And that just convinces non-Jews and Jews alike that we're all full of it. And that we have no message for them. Because they don't see agreement and love, even between people that supposedly represent the same loving God and Messiah. It's not a good testimony. So, I renounce absolutely everything Jewish, every law, right and custom.
It was said that explicitly?
That is a quote, yes. So, I mean, what are they being forced to renounce here? Sure sounds like the Torah itself.
Yeah. The identity God gave.
I imagine the promise of a new covenant for the Jews. Kind of seems like you'd have to renounce that and maybe say, I understand now that God made that new covenant with people other than the Israelite people. And now I need to become part of that or I'm going to hell. So from the 4th century until the modern period, millions of Jews converted to Christianity and left behind their Jewish identity. I'll stop there, and I don't have time. It's already well past. You know, I really see the same spirit at work in these things as the one that wants to kill babies. There is evil in the world. There aren't separate evils. There aren't different kinds of evil. There is evil. And it's all from the same place. My thoughts are better organized today than almost any occasion I can remember. I feel compelled to stop. And that was a real kicker. You know, I became part of a really messy thing quite a long time ago now. It's called Messianic Movement. And I dare say it is the most exasperating, frustrating thing I've ever encountered in my life. But I've never felt like I belong to anything the way I have felt since then. Even on occasions when I was at places hearing things said that made me think I should probably just pack up and leave because I wasn't wanted and wasn't needed. But I made a choice to listen to people that were in pain, that had been hounded and murdered and chased all over the world and made to renounce everything about themselves and what God promised to their people. And pain in a person might make them act in a way that you find it hard to take. But it's worth it. It's worth feeling your own pain to understand the pain of a people that, no congratulations to them, God chose to bring redemption to mankind through. And I've never encountered as many people from as many countries in as many colors and shades and denominations and whatever you can mention that loved each other and agreed on a purpose under God. I've never encountered as much of that anywhere else that I've ever been. And the Messianic movement is accused of being divisive. Well, it's true. So is the Evangelical Covenant Church and the Catholic Church and the Lutherans of their various synods and the Presbyterians. And so was Yeshua. I didn't come to bring unity and peace. I came to bring a sword. Men will be against the people in their own household. Sons against fathers, fathers against sons. Yes, he came to bring trouble and he also came to bring peace. Yeah, there's a conundrum there. Anyway, in this week's Torah portion, what happens in simple terms is that a messy bunch of slaves became the people of God, and God inaugurated a huge new chapter in the history of his love for all of humanity. And history has done such a good job of making Jews unwelcome in what God gave first to them, that a lot of modern Jews, want to reject now the notion that they were ever chosen by him in the first place. And it matters because of many things, but see, the full inclusion of this little people in God's plan of redemption and relationship with Yeshua. Is a kingpin of the whole watershed of the redemption of humanity. And their full inclusion, Paul says, will mean life from the dead. He doesn't say that about the Swedes or the Norwegians. He says it once again, no congratulations to them about the Jews, because it doesn't depend on men, it depends on God who chooses and God who wills and God who has mercy. And so pray for me. It's burning in me again. I told Dean a while back that it's so painful. There are things that kind of been lying there. Some for practical reasons, but it's worth being this little band of people here. Every one of you matters to me. And I love you all. And please love everybody that names the name of Yeshua, and love them all just the same, no matter whether they agree with you or me or not. Love will prevail. Love will last beyond all the things that we care about. Faith, hope, and love. So let love prevail. Father, I thank you breathe on us and speak to us, Lord. Show us the things that matter. Help us to sharpen ourselves. And stay close to you. And give us courage to tell the truth. And honor your name. And bring you glory. Yeshua's name.